Why am I doing this? I've been a physician assistant in family medicine for 20 years, a little over 20 years. And over those past 20 years, I've witnessed an alarming progression of illness in younger and younger patients. Diagnoses that were once primarily adult diseases, we now see in children. Our bodies are being overtaken by disease and illness, and being sick seems to have become the new norm. What I've learned over the years is that many of these illnesses will subside or completely resolve by cleaning up the diet. And that's if we eat foods that heal our bodies and not foods that are creating inflammation in our bodies. You have to give your body the tools it needs to get the job done. So, this little explanation here. About 15 years ago, and actually ever since I was a teenager, I had headaches, suffered from migraines. About 15 years ago, they became very frequent, pretty much on a daily basis. Did the usual, Advil, Tylenol. That didn't work. Tried the Excedrin migraine, and it worked most of the time. Got to the point where it didn't work and took it up a step. Tried some Ralpax, Maxalt, Imitrax. Those are prescription-type medicines for migraines. Worked. Still got them, though. Ended up getting an MRI scan. I figured if I had headaches every day to that level, there had to be a tumor, something growing in there. MRI scan was fine. Had a neurology consult. Neurologist checked me out. I looked good. Labs looked good. Still had daily headaches. So we tried some preventative medicine. We tried a beta blocker, which is a blood pressure medicine. And we tried a seizure medicine, which we actually use sometimes to prevent migraines. Side effects to these medicines were not ones that I could tolerate being in the field that I'm in, so I chose to stop them. What happened was one day I was sitting, had no headache throughout the day, came home, sat down, grabbed a handful of candy, and 20 minutes later had a booming migraine. And I sat there and I thought, I wonder if sugar's causing my headache. So I decided from that moment on I was going to cut out sugar and see if I got headaches. And sugar was the cause of my headaches. And I will never forget 30 days later when I sat back and I thought, wow, I just went an entire month. This was a big to-do for me, an entire month without a headache on zero medicine. So that was my first experience with how food can impact our bodies. So what is food to one man may be fierce poison to another, and that's what we're going to talk about today. Hidden food allergies. You can see that in there, right? Mm-hmm. We tried to hide it. So over 118 conditions have been shown to be either caused or provoked by delayed food reactions. And you can see all of these symptoms and diagnoses popping up on the screen. A lot of eczema, rashes, I've improved with changing diet. Allergies, colitis, rheumatoid arthritis, irritable bowel syndrome, fibromyalgia. These are really common diagnoses anymore. And I've actually treated just about every single one of these by changing the diet. So some people, and I hear this all the time in my office, no way. There's no way food is causing my irritable bowel. And I thought the same thing. No way can a food make my head feel like it wants to blow up. But it can. So I think we can all agree that anaphylaxis, the definition of anaphylaxis, is a massive allergic reaction that can kill within 16 minutes to 2 hours. So we all know that there are people out there, if they eat a peanut or a strawberry, that they could, within 16 minutes to 2 hours, die from that. That's on a food. So if a food can be that powerful that it can kill you, why couldn't it cause 118 other conditions? Mm-hmm. So the difference... And this is important. The strawberry analogy I just gave you is an IgE allergy. That's our Energizer Bunny. That's fast. Those reactions, you eat that, and in 16 minutes to 2 hours, you have a reaction. IgG are the allergies we're going to talk about today. IgG, we think of George the Turtle. Slower in onset. Sometimes you don't even notice that the food's causing it because it's so subtle and hidden. So why the increase in food allergies? You know, why didn't we hear about this 20, 30, 40 years ago? Well, we've got widespread use of pesticides and herbicides. That's been since about the 1970s, steadily increasing since then. We've got the addition of hormones, growth additives, and antibiotics to livestock. A lot of additives, hormones being given to our cows. And I read somewhere 80% of antibiotics are actually given to our cows. Don't quote me on that, but I thought that was shocking when I read that. We overuse antibiotics. 90% of the illnesses we get are viruses. Viruses are not treated by an antibiotic. So when we get that cold and we run to the doctors and we think we need an antibiotic, we're not helping our bodies by doing that. You're going to get better in a week with the antibiotic. You're going to get better in 7 days without it. It was the same time frame. We've got a poor diet. We've got highly processed and refined foods. 80 to 90% of what you're going to find in that grocery store should not make it into your cart, unfortunately. And we have chemicals in our food and water. So what's happened is because of that, we've created a condition known as the leaky gut syndrome. So what I want you to do is picture the pipes and picture throwing chemicals, pesticides, herbicides. Picture all of this going down your pipes day after day, week after week, year after year. Over time, what's going to happen to that pipe? It's going to start to break down and it's going to corrode. So let's talk about the things that are creating that. We've got chemicals, and we talked about this last time, the different chemicals. Partially hydrogenated oils, those are the trans fats. And labels are somewhat deceptive. You can see a label that will say no trans fats, yet you can read an ingredient that says hydrogenated oils. And it's if it's under a certain percentage, they're allowed to label it as zero trans fats. So always read your ingredients. Aspartame and sucralose are artificial sweeteners. Sucralose is Splenda. They are known to cause cancer. All of these chemicals actually are considered carcinogenic. So, which means the ability to cause cancer. MSG, now able to be labeled as natural flavors. So if you don't see MSG, but you have something that says natural flavors, it doesn't mean it has MSG in it, but it could. MSG will give you a firework feeling. So if you eat something and you say, wow, that was really good, probably has MSG in it. Or if you've been eating it and then you're thinking, oh, I can't wait to get home and have another drink of that, it probably, if it says natural flavorings, probably has the MSG in it. Things like the BHA and BHT are also preservatives. You'll find those in potato chips. Very big causes for behavior problems in children. Sodium nitrate and nitrites are in your lunch meats. When you eat those, they break down with your stomach acid and actually can cause stomach cancers. Artificial colors. With the artificial colors, you're looking for anything that has a number. So if you look at the ingredients and you see red dye number 40, yellow number 5, avoid it. Artificial colors are actually made from petroleum. I don't think any of us would knowingly put petroleum into our bodies. A lot of the sports drinks that have colors in it, and think about this, these kids are drinking this day after day at their sporting events. They're putting a lot of hidden chemicals into their bodies. I include these in orange are actually the Dirty Dozen. I included two extra. You can see sugar and high fructose corn syrup. And I include them under the chemicals because the refined sugar is basically similar to a chemical. And if you look at the chemical compound of sugar, it's very close to the chemical compound of poison. High fructose corn syrup is a cheap source of sugar. It doesn't turn off the hunger switch. When you eat that, it requires your liver to try to metabolize it. We've got a significant increase in fatty liver disease. It will actually affect your liver the same way that alcohol affects your liver. So if you've been told your liver enzymes are elevated, if you've been told you've got a fatty liver, noted incidentally on an ultrasound or a CAT scan, start pulling high fructose corn syrup from your diet. Pesticides. So it's very sad that we even have to talk about this. 20, 30, 40 years ago, we didn't have to worry about seeking out products that were organic. We need to do that today. With my last presentation, we talked about the number of chemicals in some of these foods. And if you recall, strawberries had 50-some chemicals. Cucumbers had over 80 chemicals. So most of us eat these 12 thinking we're eating foods that are healthy. And what's happening is we may potentially be putting hundreds of chemicals unknowingly into our bodies. So I do need you, if you're buying any of those 12, you do want to seek out organic. I have papers for you I'll give you at the end that have the Dirty Dozen on it. What I would recommend you do is keep it with you, take it to the grocery store, make sure you're getting those 12 organic, copy it, go to customer service, and tell them you want these 12 available in your grocery store. So if we start demanding that, hopefully we start at least seeing those 12 so we don't have to go to three and four different places to get it. Or start your own garden is always an idea too. The lowest in pesticides these are called the Clean 15. I would still say if you can, try to get them organic. If you can, throw them into your garden. Most of these are going to be lower in pesticides because they've got a rind, but the foods are still grown in soil that's had the chemicals. GMO, genetically modified foods, and if you remember, genetically modified foods mean that we've taken the DNA from the food and combined it with a DNA from something else. For instance, wheat is the DNA molecule, the wheat DNA, along with a pesticide molecule, and we've combined these. So we've created this foreign protein. When we eat these foreign proteins, our body doesn't know what to do with it. It creates inflammation. If you remember my splinter analogy at the last lecture, I didn't put that on here, it was a little grotesque. But if I stuck 5 splinters in your arm, would your body leave them there? Absolutely not. It's going to create inflammation, and it's going to create pus, and it's going to try to push them out. Why? Because they're a foreign body. They don't belong in your arm. These are foreign proteins. And sad to say, 80% plus of corn, wheat, and soy in America is genetically modified. And if you look at the staples to the standard American diet, it's corn, wheat, and soy. An interesting fact is Ritalin, which is a prescription for ADD, 90% of Ritalin prescriptions written worldwide are given to Americans. Wow. I wonder if there's a connection. So if we go back to the leaky gut and we think the kitchen sink, this is what's happening in our bodies. So we've got foods, and we included some of our favorite foods here, and we eat this stuff, and now we've created a leaky gut. We've got holes in the intestine, and what's happening is now protein from the egg is getting on the outside, protein from bananas, from bread, from milk, from pineapple. All of these pineapple... these proteins, once they get on the outside of the intestine, your body now looks at them as an invader and it attacks them. It builds up a response to it. And now you've developed a food allergy. So this is why we see this significant 400% increase in food allergies than we did just 2 decades ago. So here's an allergy checklist. I put a whole bunch of symptoms up here that are very, very common if you've got food allergies. And I'll give you a minute to read through those and kind of see if you qualify for any of those. And I have a lot of patients who will look at those and say, yeah, I can check off all of those. Those are common food allergy symptoms. The top three food allergies are dairy, wheat, and eggs. Easy way to remember this. When there's a snowstorm, what three foods disappear first? Can't find any bread, milk, or eggs. Not sure why you wouldn't buy the shrimp. And you're going to be stuck indoors. So this is, I have some examples here of the food allergy tests that some of you have done after we had done the last presentation. So are you able to see those okay? So this test here, you can clearly see off the chart for dairy. Asparagus was positive. Barley, wheat, rye, spelt, and whole wheat are all from the gluten category. So that would make sense if we've got somebody off the chart for those that you're going to see the whole list of those. Peanuts, also a common food allergy, one of the top seven. And then we've got a handful of fruits that came back positive. And then, of course, the eggs were in there as well. Now these, so if we have somebody who says, you know, I had a bunch of those on the allergy checklist, not sure about doing the allergy test, what I've had a number of patients do is get rid of the first three, get rid of the top three. The only problem is these are sometimes hard to figure out without actually doing the test for that. So if we can get you to your optimum level of health by just getting rid of those three, we can stop there. But if we're still dealing with the fatigue and the rash and medical symptoms, then we might need to take it one step farther and check for food allergies. Here's another one. Again, you can see very high to the dairy. We've got garlic, pepper on this one. We've got, now this one's a little bit tricky because a lot of times when we have to eliminate dairy, we choose either the almond milk, soy milk, rice milk, coconut milk. This person would not be wise choosing soy. And actually, I actually saw this girl today for something totally unrelated to food allergies, but she said, Jody, I have to tell you, they were out and they had gluten-free French fries. And she said, I no sooner ate them and I could feel something in my throat. And she said, so her thought was, you know, they probably put other fries in that same oil. And she went back and she asked, and she said, you know, what's the deal with the oil? And they actually used a soy-based oil, so which was interesting that she made that connection. She knew, okay, I didn't feel good after I ate that. She did the math, figured it out, and connected it to one of her food allergies. She had a lot. She had the soy. We have the wheat. We've got peanuts off the chart. And we see peanuts a lot because peanuts tend to hold a mold called aflatoxin, which tends to create inflammation in our bodies. It tends to make us more reactive. Bunch of fruits. Now, the nice thing I like about this test is we've got 96 foods that are being tested. You can clearly see she's got a lot of foods that need to be avoided. But if we look at the foods that she can eat, everything in the green is a safe food for her. So we can clearly start doing some meal planning just by looking at what's in the green. Maybe a little less overwhelming than what's in the red. The honey, this girl had chronic sinus symptoms. Once we got her off of her dairy and honey, her sinus symptoms completely resolved. She was using honey. When you're sick, I tell people all the time, drink some honey or drink some tea, put some honey in it. She was doing this every day, not knowing that this was one of her food allergies. The other thing to keep in mind, too, and I want to go back to the IgE slide and the IgG. If you have an allergy, for instance, to peanuts, and you know every time I eat peanuts, I get hives, and you do this test and it shows negative for peanuts, that doesn't mean you can eat peanuts. It means it's not an IgG allergy. Okay, so I have had patients who have come and said, well, I know I'm allergic to this, this, and this, but it doesn't show up on here. There's a difference between IgE and IgG. IgE allergies you will not add back in your diet. Those are usually lifelong, very significant allergies. The IgG allergies we can usually quiet down and eventually add them back. So I have one more here, and this was an interesting lady. This lady had no symptoms, felt fine, but had a history of uterine cancer in her 50s, and more recently was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma. So what was happening was her body wasn't giving her those outward signs, but the cancer diagnosis, her body wasn't stepping up to the plate, and the cancer snuck in there. So we ended up food testing her just to see, and this is what we came up with. Milk off the charts, wheat. And what's interesting is people who are allergic to wheat have an increased risk of lymphoma. They have seen that connection. So if we've got the allergy, now we know, let's yank these foods, see if we can give her immune system more of a boost and try to get this lymphoma under control. And I'm very happy to say that a year later, a CT scan showed no increase in the cancer. This is an example of one that we send to our lab. So those other three were the food allergy tests that I order from a lab in Florida called Better Control of Health. This is a lab that we send to a local lab, which is nice. It tests for only 12 to 13 foods. The problem is when we get back something like this. So I have, out of all the foods, I've got two foods that I know are safe foods for this child. So in that instance, I would recommend doing the 96 food allergy test anyway, because now we can meal plan better. But most insurances, I hate to say it, the food allergy testing, the IgG allergies, are very highly debated by the medical community. So most insurances, when you call about IgG testing, will not cover it. This test now, I'm told, cost about $700. Yeah, for 13 foods. The test kits of the three that I showed you, they sell for $300. I get them at a discount for $200, and I sell them for $200. So if there's anybody who wants to do them, I will make them available to you. So the fires, and what this means is when we look at those food allergies and we see some that are completely off the chart, that tells me we've got inflammation in the body. So I want you to think of that as this big bonfire. What happens is if we don't continue to fuel that bonfire, if we stop throwing logs in that bonfire, what happens? It starts to go down. So we go from a big bonfire and we put it down to this smaller campfire. Now, if we start to feel better and we throw those foods back on board, what's going to happen? You're going to flare it right back up. If we get rid of those foods long enough, stop throwing logs in the fire long enough, we may put the fire out, which then means that eventually at some point down the road, we may be able to add them back. So one of the remarks I will get from patients is, for instance, I had somebody who came back highly allergic to eggs. Yeah, I eat eggs every day for breakfast. I don't have any problems with eggs. Okay. So what happens there is when you're exposed to it on a daily basis, your body's going to downplay the reaction. Think about when you make bacon. Breakfast, you've got your bacon, you sit around, you watch television, you read the newspaper, here comes the mailman, you walk outdoors, you get the mail, you walk back inside and you say, oh, it smells like bacon in here. It always smelled like bacon. The entire morning that you sat there reading the paper, it smelled like bacon. Your body downplayed that reaction. So what happens is until we remove those foods, the breakfast of eggs every day, and then you try to add them back, then you'll notice. Get rid of them for 3 to 4 weeks and try to add them back. Your body will tell you. I had one girl whose eggs were off the chart, and when she had horrible anxiety, couldn't drive, stopped driving, her anxiety was so bad. She thought I was crazy when I said about food allergy testing her. I get that a lot. And she came back and said, I couldn't believe it. When I got rid of those eggs, my anxiety went away. And when I tried to add them back, it was immediate anxiety. Now, one of the reasons why I think food allergies are so highly debated is because eggs may have caused anxiety for her. Eggs may cause migraines for somebody else, could cause fatigue for somebody else, could cause back pain for someone else. So it all depends on where the inflammation is, where your weak areas are. Does that make sense? So the other thing I often hear from patients when they come back is they'll say, well, I don't feel much better. And I'll say, oh, did you get rid of the foods you're allergic to? Well, I got rid of most of them, and I don't notice any difference. Okay. So let's say you're allergic to cats, and I got rid of most of the cats. Are you still reacting? Without a doubt, you're still reacting because you still have some exposure. I'll take it a step farther. I'm going to get rid of all of them, but I'm going to hide one under your couch. You're still reacting. So you have to read ingredients. If there's a milk allergy and you get rid of your ice cream, you get rid of your cheese, you get rid of your yogurt, you get rid of your milk, but you still have it added in your mashed potatoes, you can't see it, it's just added, it's hidden in there, you may still react to that. So you have to go looking for that. And that kind of is like the girl who ate the French fries. She knew at this point, she's been feeling so good, there was something that triggered this. She knew to go back and look for it. I had another lady who was highly allergic to eggs and did her own baking at home, made a crab dinner. And she said, Jody, I wasn't even done with my dinner and my hip was hurting, killing me. So she goes, I went back and I ripped everything out of, you know, the kitchen and the trash. And she used imitation crab. And there must be egg in your imitation crab. But she knew to go back and look. So she connected those dots. And now she's back in control over how she feels. So now that we have leaky guts, leaky pipes, how do we fix it? And what we're going to do is, number one, we have to stop throwing chemicals down the pipe. It doesn't do any good to food allergy test you and remove your allergies if you're going to continue to break down your pipe. It won't work. Then we have to call in the plumber. And by the plumber, I mean probiotics. I'm a big fan of probiotics. Probiotics are good, healthy bacteria, and what's happened, and you can imagine with the use of the pesticides and the chemicals, we've destroyed a lot of the good, healthy bacteria. We've completely knocked them right out. So we have to replace them, and the faster we replace them, the faster they're going to get in there and start patching up those holes that are in your pipe. Now, we need to avoid wheat and gluten 100%. That includes those who are not allergic to wheat. So if we do your food allergy testing and wheat was not on there, I'm still going to recommend you get rid of wheat. And the reason for that, number one, 80% of wheat in America is genetically modified, so it's not a good substance for us anyway. But number two, wheat tends to create more intestinal permeability, which means it's adding to the leakiness of your gut lining. Avoid alcohol. I was looking to see if anyone was going to get up and walk out. All right, we're done with this lecture. And the same reason is for the alcohol, is it increases the permeability. It doesn't mean you can never drink alcohol. It just means in the treatment phase, I would recommend that you don't drink it. And then, of course, eliminate your food allergies. So anything that can create inflammation, we need to get this out. This is a treatment phase. This isn't things you're going to have to do forever and ever. However, if you add the chemicals back in 6 months after we've healed your gut, you're going to end up right back at square one. But you're going to feel so good in 6 months. You're not going to want to add it back because you're going to start connecting that. Well, when I eat this, I feel bad for 3 days. I'm not really feeling bad for 3 days. So when we avoid all of those, and you have to think, if you've gotten chemicals in your body for decades, we've eaten foods with pesticides for decades, these are chemicals. We've eaten food allergies now unknowingly that are creating problems for a long time. If we all of a sudden say, okay, we're wiping all that out, we're going to go gung-ho and get rid of it, you're going to have most likely some withdrawal symptoms. And I do get phone calls on this, and I do take it serious. I've never had anyone's labs come back abnormal doing this, but I will still check labs to make sure. The common symptoms from withdrawal would be you may get a headache. Malaise is just overall feeling blah, feeling bad. Nausea, dizziness, mood swings, and altered sleep. Not uncommon to have those. Can last up to 2 weeks, doesn't usually last the full 2 weeks, sometimes a couple of days. You will know when you're pulled right out of that. You will go from feeling blah to, wow, I feel good. So my tacks. This story here is if you get your food allergy test back and there's multiple allergies on there and you say, well, you know what? I'm not going to be able to get rid of all of them at the same time. I'm going to get rid of one at a time. So if you're standing on three tacks and we remove one of them, do you feel better? Not much, and not even a third better. You probably don't notice much of a difference at all. If you remove two of them, you might start to notice that you're feeling better. Some of the food allergy tests show about 10 tacks. So if you remove 7 or 8 of them, you may notice. But the point here is sometimes you have to remove all of them to really notice a difference. And then if you try to add one back, that tack comes back under your foot, is going to be painful and uncomfortable, and you're going to say, yeah, I don't think I like that, and you're going to remove it again. So it's been very interesting with the food allergies. I've been connecting the dots for patients for years now, and most of the feedback I've gotten has been on my irritable bowel is better, I don't get reflux, my anxiety is better, my OCD is gone. So a lot of the feedback has been just observations that the patient has made. I have three cases here that I actually have lab proof that we're seeing changes. So it's going to be a little harder to now debate the benefit of the allergy testing. This patient here, high cholesterol, history of diabetes. We have her diet controlled, did great with all her other numbers, couldn't get this cholesterol to budge. I couldn't get her to budge to come off of the dairy either. So, and that's our number one food allergy. So I finally said, you know what, maybe it's time, you know, do you want to do the allergy testing? I think we need to, you know, consider getting rid of the dairy. Let's see if we have to get rid of it. So she decided to allergy test and also eliminate the dairy. She was highly allergic to dairy. These are her results 6 weeks after avoiding the dairy. So we went from a cholesterol of over 300 to 216. Zero medicine. Wow. I put her on zero medicine for this. The only change here was the getting rid of her food allergens. You can see her HDL cholesterol, which is the good cholesterol, heart healthy. HDL you want high, went from 63 to 71, and that's good. We want to see that, or excuse me, it went from 71 to 63, which is actually not good. We prefer to see that higher. 50 and over is what we're looking for with females. So even though we saw a drop there, it did not hurt this particular patient. The next slide actually shows an increase. Her triglycerides, which are the fats in the bloodstream, went from 70 to 113. And her LDL is the bad cholesterol. That's the one that we actually like to see lower. She went from over 200 to 130. Another test that I will do on my patients, especially if their cholesterol is high, is I look for a marker for inflammation, and that's this hsCRP. hsCRP is high sensitivity. CRP is a marker for inflammation. I call it heart sensitive. So when I have somebody with a high cholesterol, I want to see at what risk are they for heart disease. Am I okay kind of following this through diet, or do I need to be more aggressive getting this down? And her hsCRP was initially 7.2, which does make me a little bit nervous. We dropped her in 6 weeks to 4.2. My goal is to get her under one. Under three puts her at average risk, but my goal is to get her under one. So she'll be very interesting. We just did this in May. She'll be rechecked in August. This case here is a lady who came to me. She's a new patient to me since about November, December, and she came with an autoimmune thyroid condition called Hashimoto's hypothyroidism. And she had numerous labs done for years prior to me seeing her. The labs that I had done in December show her antibodies to be 86 and then over 1,000, and then again in February to be 85 and over 1,000. Now, this lady in December, we talked about getting rid of the chemicals, the pesticides, the genetically modified food, completely on board with doing all of that. Still didn't budge her thyroid antibodies. She did the food allergy test in February, and then here are her numbers in June. So we took her thyroid antibodies from 86 and 85 down to 2. Normal is less than 1. And we took her other thyroid antibody from over 1,000 down to 425. So not normal, not back to normal values, but definitely a significant difference. And she actually cried when I told her this. Mm-hmm. Tears of joy. This patient here, again, patient of mine for years, really struggled with getting the cholesterol down, very high cholesterol, started at 358, brought it down to 332, and this was just on diet, exercise, everything besides the food allergy testing. Finally, she said, all right, I'm going to do it. Let's see if this makes a difference. We found food allergies. You can see her hsCRP was also elevated at 4.4. She did get that down to the top normal at 3 through her diet. But once we did the food allergy testing, we dropped her from 332 down to 279, improved her HDL, dropped her triglycerides significantly from 275 down to 164. LDL went from 216 down to 182. So these are significant drops. Again, not where we need to be, but clearly going in the right direction. And these drops were also without any medicine added. And her hsCRP is actually down to 1.4. So despite these numbers being elevated, high cholesterol, our bodies need cholesterol. It's the inflammation that causes the cholesterol to stick to your plaques that cause the problem. Okay, so that's why if I have somebody who I think has a problem with their cholesterol, I'm checking this hsCRP to get a better idea. Okay. So very important that I mention this. If you are on medications, you need to be monitored very closely if you're making these changes. I've had patients with diabetes of hemoglobin A1Cs, if you're diabetic, you know exactly what that is, of over 13. Normal is under 6, and I've had them drop down within 3 months to normal. And you can't do that if you're on insulin or diabetic medicines. You'll drop your sugars, you'll become hypoglycemic, and that can be dangerous. So you need to monitor your sugars. If you're on blood pressure medicines, you need to monitor your blood pressures. You can very quickly have low readings, and then we've got to start to gradually back you off of your blood pressure medicine. I oftentimes will take people off of it. You're not hurting anyone by having a slightly elevated blood pressure. 150 over 100 is not going to hurt you temporarily while we're trying to bring your numbers down. Sugars, I'll tolerate up to 300 as we're working on that. Mm-hmm. And we get them down, and it's actually very exciting to see that those numbers come down. I wanted to put up here, this is where I practice. I'm at a small practice in Middletown. I have business cards that I brought along, and I have flyers that I have on the back table that also has my information. So if anyone is interested, food allergy test kits I brought along if anyone's interested. But if anyone is interested in seeing me, please call. We'll get you in as soon as we can. If you have labs that were done, bring your labs, any information so that I can start putting this puzzle together and figure it out for you. But normally we can fix. Our bodies are wonderful at healing ourselves. And I tell my patients all the time, if I put a big scratch down your arm, I don't have to fix it. Your body's going to fix that. But if I spray chemicals on that, it's not going to heal well. It's going to get infected and inflamed. So if we give it the opportunity to heal, we'll heal itself. We have to stop inflaming our bodies. And the sad thing is, like we mentioned with the organic foods, is a lot of us are trying to do the right thing, and we're not realizing the amount of toxins we're putting into our body. I also wanted to include some suggested reading. I had included this on at the last presentation as well. This is, if you're interested in reading on this kind of information, these are excellent books, very good information. The NDD diet, I think every parent should have to read. NDD stands for Nutrition Deficit Diet. Talks about how foods play an impact in learning disabilities, how foods play a role in ADD, and how we can fix that without medication. And remember, 90% of Ritalin prescriptions are given to Americans. This isn't genetics. This is something that we're doing here in America that's creating this. Hidden Food Allergies, excellent book. That's a little paperback book, probably going to cost you less than $15. Very interesting, especially if you've gotten your food allergy testing back and you want a little bit more information. But that will also talk about different symptoms and diagnoses that have been linked to the food allergies. Healing the New Childhood Epidemics. It's a bigger book. It's going to take a little bit more time to read that. Anyone who has a child with allergies, asthma, ADD, or autism really should check out that book. And he will talk about the genetically modified foods, the chemicals, the pesticides, gets into all of that as well. The Immune System Recovery Plan is a book for anyone with an autoimmune illness or anyone who doesn't want an autoimmune illness. Very, very beneficial in helping to recover. And this is also done naturally. Medicines aren't recommended, but they do talk about supplements in these. Your Food is Fooling You by Dr. David Kessler. Dr. Kessler was the former head of the FDA, so he has an inside scoop on what's going on with our foods. And what's interesting in that book, and I've read it in numerous other books, is food scientists are paid a lot of money to find the bliss point of food, to find foods that are addictive. If you remember the commercial, Bet You Can't Eat Just One? Yeah, I mean, they do. They get you to that point where you can't sit it down. If you know, when you think about the number of times you've sat there with a bag of chips or any snack food, and before you know it, the bag is gone. They do that because it's the chemicals in there are creating that it doesn't turn off the hunger switch. I mean, when else would you eat a bag? You couldn't sit and eat a whole bag of cucumbers. a whole bag of potatoes, you couldn't do it. And if you knew how many potatoes were actually in that bag of potato chips, you'd never be able to eat a whole bag of potatoes. The Ultramind Solution, one of my favorite books as well. Anyone with depression, anxiety, OCD, any mental illnesses definitely needs to read that. There's a bunch of quizzes in that book that you can go through. The quizzes are just basically, do you have this? Do you have this? Just check marks. It's not anything major. But if you have numerous ones in each section, it'll tell you, are you magnesium deficient? Are you vitamin D deficient? Are you deficient in omega-3 fatty acids? These are all things that our bodies need that are now very deficient in some of our food supply. Dangerous Grains talks about the problems with the wheat, and then Wheat Belly also will get into the problems with the wheat. And Dr. Davis is a cardiologist who found that if he changed altered patients' diets, he was actually improving outcomes, not only with heart disease, but was also seeing it with diabetes as well. And I'm going to leave that up. Does anybody have any questions?
I had one of those tests done when you were here last, and there's the three stage or the four stages, the high and the moderate and the low.
Yep.
And then, so are you okay in the low, or should you avoid that too?
Yeah, that's a great question. So if we remember the color slide with the 96 food allergies, the green was the okay. The yellow was the low reaction, and then there's an orange and a red that are your moderate and high reaction. The red is definitely high reactors. The yellow, being a low reaction, you would think should give you less of a reaction, and usually that's the case, but not always. So I do recommend, as challenging as it may be, you want to try to keep to just foods, eat foods that are in the green zone. Try to stay away from anything yellow and up. Now, do we need to avoid the yellow foods for 6 months? It's hard to say, but once you cut them out, remember the bacon, once you walk away from them and you add them back, you'll know. And I'll tell you, my test showed positive for blueberries, and I thought, no way. I had tested in November. I'm like, okay, well, that's fine. I have blueberry bushes. They're not, you know, ripe until May, June. After three days of migraines, I thought, you know what? What's going on here? And then I realized I'm out there picking my blueberries. My blueberries were in the yellow. 6 months later. So very interesting. And it doesn't have to be a headache, remember. Skin issues, acne. I have a lot of patients who will come in and say, my face cleared up, or I'm not bloated. If you weigh yourself on a daily basis and you notice that one day you're this weight, the next day you're 3 pounds heavier, the next day there's 4 pound difference, we don't gain and lose 3 and 4 pounds a day. We retain and lose fluid. And that's very, very common with food allergies. So if you're one of those who you step on the scale on a regular basis and you see this fluctuation, you're probably eating something that you're allergic to.
Making
you retain fluid. So what your body's trying to do, and our bodies are always trying to protect ourselves. So when you eat this, you're reacting to it, your body's going to try to dilute it. It's like a toxin, and you're just throwing water on it to try to dilute it out. So, and that's what your body will do. And you'll see that fluid retention in your fingers. You'll see it in your ankles. You might see it as bloating. Sometimes people notice the puffiness in their face.
Now, we got the test done, and even if our wheat is low, you're still saying to cut that out as
I
one
am.
Of the other ones.
Okay. I am. Now, I know.
We were so excited because it was old.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, remember, most of the bread is genetically modified. So unless you're looking for a non-GMO bread, it's going to eventually create a problem. You may not need to get rid of it for 6 months. I would say definitely 4 to 6 weeks, and then if you want to try to add back a non-GMO bread, you can, if you can find it, you can.
Mm-hmm. Organic bread.
organic bread. Yeah.
The other thing is, okay, in dairy, what, we can't have any dairy. What do you suggest? Like, do you suggest, like, we, Larry's like, let's get coconut milk. Is that okay?
Yeah.
I mean, coconut milk and almond milk. We even found some organic, coconut sugar. I mean, are those things that...
Yeah, those are fine. So if you're allergic to dairy, and I'm going to leave these. This is a green smoothie recipe, and I usually will hand these out to my patients because a lot of times I'm pulling milk from their diet anyway, and these will give you the non-dairy options. There's rice milk, there's coconut milk, there's soy milk, there's hemp milk, there's a flax milk. So those are all fine. Now, if you're going to do soy, you need a non-GMO soy. And silk soy milk, I've noticed a little non-GMO symbol on that, so you'd be fine with that. I have had patients, however, allergic to almonds, soy, coconut. So I've had a few who we've really had to be. In fact, I had one patient who was allergic to almond, soy, coconut, and rice, along with the dairy. So, which leaves hemp milk and flax milk, which, of course, you know, we don't test for hemp allergies and flax allergies, but would leave those two milks.
But then you want the silk that is unsweetened,
right?
Like we bought one that was vanilla and it had cane
sugar. A lot of sweeteners in it. Yeah, and as well, especially if you're allergic to sugar. So if sugar came back positive. Yeah, I always tell people, if you ever see anyone crying in a grocery store, ask them if they come to me. Almost guarantee it. So the cane, with cane sugar, anything that comes from sugar, you need to, from the cane sugar. So that in your milk you'd have to avoid. But your coconut sugar, your date sugar, your honey, your 100% maple, the agave, those are all fine. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and actually, if you remember the chemicals that I had added, the sugar up there, Blessing in Disguise. There's a great book called The Great Cholesterol Myth, also written by a cardiologist that talks about the overuse of statins. And they blame the rate of, or the increase in heart disease on sugar. Sugar's very inflammatory. I've seen good things getting rid of sugar in patients' diets. So think of it as a blessing. You just have to be creative. A lot of times we can switch honey in its place, agave, maple syrup. So certainly try to look for those varieties. Yeah. Yeah.
I just had a question. If you get like seedless watermelons, those are genetically modified, aren't they?
Boy, that's a good question.
Because I think your normal watermelons came with the seeds, and you had to spit them out, but the new ones don't. And I think they are.
Yeah.
He says that every time we eat watermelon, it's like, this is the Tracy.
Yeah, I would think they would have to be a hybrid or genetically modified. Well, thanks a lot. You've just ruined all of our picnics.
No, it's only I
back at you. Yeah. Aw. Yep. Yeah.
For you guys with the flour or the wheat problem with the bread, I don't even know if you can use this, but I know that we were just at Costco and they actually have a coconut flour now.
Yeah.
So you could probably make your bread out of that.
Coconut flour is going to be more doughy. I use brown rice flour. If you're gonna switch off from white flour to a different flour, your brown rice flour is gonna be a better alternative for that. There's amaranth flour, there's almond flour. So and they each have their own characteristics. So as you experiment with them, you'll find where you like them best. This way of getting better is challenging and overwhelming. But the people who do it come out on top, and they feel great, and there's zero meds that go along with that. So it's well worth the struggle that it takes to get there. And the nice thing about doing this is you've got a lot of support around you with your church family, and you know, certainly, you know, talk to your friends and family about this so that they can support you as well. I used to, when I figured out my allergies to sugar, I would go visit my family and they'd be like, just eat it. And I would say, okay, And I would hand them a fork, and I would say, okay, you sit there and stab yourself in the head for the next hour, and I will eat this. And they'd say, okay, never mind. Because that's what it did to me. Sugar gave me a migraine, and I knew it did, and a little bit would have done that. So I'm willing to eat that if you're willing to stab yourself in the head. Yeah. Yeah. And once you connect the dots, and it's so important that your body doesn't say, I'm going to give you a headache today, and I'm going to give you diarrhea, and I'm going to give you joint pain. It's there for a reason. Sometimes the weather plays a role, and you'll learn that. Okay, it's raining today. I feel bad. But more often than not, your food's going to play a role. And if we can start connecting those dots and say, okay, why I felt great yesterday, why didn't I feel good today? Well, I had a milkshake last night. So start, I didn't. Yeah. But connect those dots so that you it keeps you in the driver's seat, it keeps the inflammation down, and then it allows you the control over, okay, well, I know if I can have a little bit of this, but if I eat too much, it tips me over.
This might be a dumb question. I think I might have a wheat allergy, and I eat a lot of oats. Are oats considered
a
wheat?
Yeah, no, that's actually a great question. Oats are gluten-free. It is not considered wheat, but many of the oats are actually manufactured in facilities that also manufacture wheat. So if you have a definite wheat allergy, there are some people that are that sensitive to a little bit of the wheat protein that you may tip over with the oat. So there you want to look for your gluten. You're looking for gluten-free oats. Okay. So oats are technically gluten-free. Yeah, it should say right on there if it's gluten-free as well. Okay. Yeah. Organic means there's no chemicals, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's not. It could have been processed in a plant that also has organic wheat.
Jody, what about also, do you want to let them know about rice with the arsenic?
Oh, yeah. Some of the rice has been found to have arsenic in it. Yeah. Yeah, I didn't do this to your food, so don't be mad at me. this is why I say do your own garden. You know what's going into you. Of course, we're not going to do rice, but you know what's going into your food then. And, you know, there's a lot of question, too. We had this question last time as far as, well, how do you know it's organic if you're buying it organic? I don't. Unless somebody knows how to test every food you get to see if there's any chemicals in it. What I know is when I pick my strawberries from my garden, they're organic. So the more you can do that, and if that's not your forte, then find somebody who it is and say, okay, this is what I'm going to trade this information or this with you, and you do this for me. Most times when we have gardens, you have more food than you know what to do with. So if you have something you can say, you know what, let's share this, or you grow it and I'll make it if you're better at cooking. So look for, and that's why I say community support is important. Get a group of people that you can work together with to get to that optimum level of health.
Two things. One, for those who have dealt with or is new to the wheat allergy, I've been dealing with it for several years. So I use spelt for those who can have spelt, and I can get spelt pasta if you want that information. The other thing is sugar. Is there any other alternatives other than your typical, maple syrup or honey? Because I know that I've heard of stuff being like where you take something like, I don't know, even raisins and dilute them or heat them up and dilute them, blend them or something.
Yeah, and dates and raisins are high in natural sugars. And that's something, too, when you're looking for sugars, you're not looking at sugar. I've had a lot of people say, oh, well, this has only this many sugar grams in it. If you're allergic to sugar, you're allergic to the cane sugar, not the natural sugars. So you can, I've not done that with the raisins or the dates. Raisins and dates are great. If you need a sweet treat, you can certainly eat raisins and dates just to get that natural sugar. I usually will use honey, agave, maple syrup. You can use the date sugar, the coconut sugar. So those would be alternatives there. The spelt, if you're allergic to wheat, if you're allergic just to wheat, spelt is okay. If you're allergic to gluten, it is not. So if you're allergic to gluten, you'd want to pull spelt from your diet too.
Yes, if you're allergic to whey, does that mean all milk products?
Yeah, whey is the protein in milk. Right. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Yeah.
Do you
not,
realize everything has
yeah.
whey in it?
Yeah. Yeah, there's actually a lot of food that doesn't have whey in it. If you, like the whey protein, a lot of people will do protein powders. There's plant-based protein powders. It doesn't have whey in that do not have the whey in it. There's a lot of options out there. Google this. Google's a great tool. Type in, you know, protein powders without whey, and you'll get a whole bunch of alternatives that you can do.
And trust me, because I've been doing this with Jody since last July, I guess it was. And when I first met her, it was very overwhelming because it took dairy. I took everything away, the thought. And she kept saying to me, don't look at what you can't have. Look at what you can have. And once you do this after a while, you find so many interesting things, so many good things. And when you get off of these things, you feel so much better. You really do. I mean, you think better, you feel better, you have more energy. It's amazing. When I went off of sugar, I called her. I was at the grocery store. I said, do you realize, because I went off of refined sugar, but I still had, I was still doing organic cane sugar. Mm-hmm. And I found out I couldn't even do that. And I thought, oh, this is just, it's overwhelming. And she laughed, and she said, it'll get better. And it did. And so everybody can meet Jody at Costco's, and she'll take a trip through and show you what you can have. And
what about raw cane sugar, the cane itself?
Mm-hmm. If you have an allergy to sugar, that's out. Anything that comes from that sugar cane. The interesting thing about sugar is years and years ago, when prior to the refining process, there was very little diabetes. And once we went through the refining process, the rate of diabetes significantly increased. And the reason for that is if you went to the sugarcane fields and chomped on the actual sugarcane, it comes with its vitamins and minerals. Your body knows how to process that. The refined sugar doesn't have its vitamins and minerals. In order for it to be processed, it's taken your vitamins and minerals to get through your body. But it's also, because it's refined, is very inflammatory. So, and I actually did do that test after I figured out my allergies were to sugar. I went and found sugar cane at the store, and I thought, I'm going to try this. And I cut it. It's not very tasty. It's not fun to chomp on a piece of sugar cane, but I did it for the sake of my experiment, and I did not get a headache. I also will tell you that I did add it back at times. It is very hard to avoid sugar, and there were times that I'm like, you know what? This is worth it. And I would take my migraine medicine, and I would eat my dessert. The problem is it didn't always work, and there were numerous times I actually had to get Demerol shots to get rid of a headache. And then, you know, oftentimes after that, I would say, well, if it doesn't work, I might have a headache for 3 days. And, you know, my schedule's so busy. So I got to the point where I'm like, it's not worth risking it right now. And the longer you're away from it, I don't even miss it. You could put an entire bakery in front of me, and I'd be fine with just, yeah, wouldn't tempt me at all. And you'll get to that point. It took me years to get to that point. But it's no different than somebody who smokes. If you smoke and 6 months later you're surrounded by 10 people who smoke, it's still going to try to get you back. You go 10 years without smoking, doesn't matter if 20 people around you are smoking.
What about sucrose from sugar beets?
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, and so if you're allergic to sugar, you can do the other sources of the sugars. It's from the cane sugar that you would have to avoid.
Okay. As far as honey, I've heard that like a lot of the honey on the grocery store shelves is not
processed.
Good honey.
Yeah.
So
you want raw, your best bet, once honey has been heated, it is basically just a sweetener. You're not getting any health benefits from it. And when I recommend honey to people, I'm recommending it because of the health benefits. So you want to look for raw or unprocessed. And usually you'll find that in the organic aisle. Some of the farmers markets will have that. And I would just ask them, has this been heated? If it's been heated, it is still an effective sweetener, but you're not pulling any of the benefits from it. And there's actually benefits to allergies with your honey, especially if you get a local honey. If you've got allergies to the environmental, the trees, the pollens, if you're getting the local honey, over time we find that it'll actually desensitize those allergies.
You know, this isn't just affecting us. My dog has allergies.
Oh, yeah.
And the veterinarian tested him for food allergies.
Yeah.
And I got this whole
Yeah, there's no debate there.
Report.
They yeah. don't debate it in dogs.
No, they don't. They don't. But one of the things that they did was, I mean, I have a list of all the things that he cannot eat. And mm-hmm. the foods, I mean, they have the same stuff in dog food, the wheat, the corn,
yeah.
the soy, all of those things that we had to get out of his diet. But they also put him on allergy shots. Now, that's an IgA response, isn't it? Is it an IgG with
IgE.
Allergy
shots? Yeah, well, usually the allergy shots are for IgE allergies.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, because they did that for him. They put him on allergy shots and then pulled all this out of his diet. And I thought, wow, I want to go to my veterinarian.
Yeah, right. We could do this without the shots. Yeah, it's interesting because I was watching television and there's a commercial on about dog food with allergies. And I thought, you've got to be kidding me. So I Googled this and I looked it up. There's all kinds of information. It's the same thing that I say with people, yet it's debated in the medical community, and we accept it for the dogs. The sad thing is, though, is people will do this for their pets. Do this for you. If you're going to make those changes for your dog, do this for you. You're worth it.
I think it's probably more about money for the people, but anyway, that wasn't what I was going to say. with honey, back to... getting like local honey and the non-processed. And you said if it's heated at all, because I know sometimes if you get raw honey and you have it sitting for a while, it'll start to crystallize. And I know usually the way to fix that was you just kind of put it in some warm water
yeah.
to heat it up.
I mean, yeah. Don't heat it enough to melt that.
Liquefy it again, mm-hmm. but don't boil it or yeah. something crazy like that.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Don't throw it in the microwave. Yeah, no microwave. We'll work on that next time with the microwave cooking.
The other thing, have you ever heard of, actually got some stuff that's called powdered honey, and it's just honey that they, in powder form, that they basically...
Well, he uses it for his coffee, because we were trying to
find an alternative,
like
yeah.
powder form.
Yeah.
Or
and we found powdered honey.
I mean, it says it's
powdered
honey.
I've never
it's
heard of powdered honey. I mean, I've heard of bee pollen, and yeah. But if it's powdered, yeah, if it's just honey, I wouldn't think it would be a problem. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and this, I've got these sheets. I've typed them up. On the one side is the Dirty Dozen. That's the chemicals that were up on the slide. Does not include the sugar and high fructose corn syrup, so you have to remember those two are my plus two on there. This side here has the Dirty Dozen as far as the pesticides, and then the Clean 15. And what I would suggest is make copies of this. And that's what I would say, go into your grocery store, and if they don't have them organic there, every time you go in, you know, what do we have to do to get these organic? And if you're going in and doing that every time, and you've got all your friends and family going in and doing that, they're going to get the point that we want this food organic. And every time I would do that, I tell this to all my patients. I'm sure I'll start getting hate mail from the supermarket soon. But I have those available, and then I also have the green smoothie. I will make a mention on this. So the top has the non-dairy milks. There's a section four here that says superchargers, and I just want to mention here, because a lot of times when I have people come in, one of their concerns is weight, and they're looking to lose weight. So when I give them this smoothie recipe, and they think of all the food that's going into a blender, and then all of that's going into their body, I know what goes through your mind is, oh, I'm not going to add coconut oil and a nut butter to this. That's a lot of calories. I'm trying to lose weight. And what I tell people is this, if you were moving and one friend showed up to help you move, you're going to move, but it's going to take you a long time to do it. If you have 10 friends show up, you're getting that house moved quickly. So we are trying to fix you quickly. Get these foods, these superchargers in there. You will not gain weight from this. Inflamed bodies don't lose weight well. If we can get the coconut oils on board, the cinnamon, the ginger, and you'll see a whole list of superchargers, that's going to get in there. Yes, it's calories, doesn't matter. It's going to get in there. It's going to help you reduce the inflammation, and it's going to get you feeling better so that we get you to the point where, wow, I'm not hungry right now. You're going to start to feel these signals instead of an hour after eating, oh, I'm hungry again. And an hour after that, I'm hungry again. So if you're hungry, I don't care if you eat 10 of these a day. If you can, that's fine. You're getting all healing foods. Eventually, you will not be able to do that because your body will no longer require that. Does that make sense? So calories, and very important to know that a calorie, I've never had a patient count calories. I don't believe a calorie is a calorie. If you've got healing food and you've got inflammatory foods. So if you were counting calories, think of this. If you have 200 calories of broccoli and 200 calories of soda, that's going in your calorie counting book as 200 calories. They're totally different ends of the spectrum. I'm not worried about calories. Your body knows exactly what to do with that broccoli. Very healing. It's getting in there, reducing inflammation. Has no idea what to do with that soda, and it's creating inflammation. Make sense? Okay. All right. Any other questions? Oh, I did mention I do have test kits. If anyone didn't test last time and is interested, I sell them, like I said, for what I get them for. They're $200. It's a finger stick. So it comes with a little lancet. You can take it home, sit at your, wash your hands good. It comes with all the instructions. Prick your finger, and then you just sit there, and it's a little swab that you have to kind of bleed out onto. You let it dry, and then you mail it in. It comes with an envelope, self-addressed, stamped. It's ready to go. Usually you'll get results in about two weeks. Put your email on there. There should be a spot for the email. If not, make sure your email's on there because they will send you your own copy. Once you get that, if you're not a patient of mine, please take my business card. There are not a lot of providers out there who are trained in IgG allergies, and a lot of times you'll get people, and I've had allergists who have said, no, don't worry about IgG allergies. And I've had so many patients over the last few years improve on just that test result that I think it's important to check for that if we've got that missing puzzle piece. But if you go to your doctors and they're not trained in that, I don't want you to be turned off on, well, I don't need to avoid these allergens, when really that could be the biggest piece of the puzzle that you're missing. Okay. Good.